extending a warm invitation to Kaylee's Corner. I hope you were able to bear with me through this brief hiatus I took, but I've got some cool things down the line for you. If you are unfamiliar with the content that goes on in this space, my friends and I just talk about music, maybe the cultural implications surrounding music and the artist's life and their artwork. Maybe you learned something cool. If you knew something before and you learned something more, that's cool. If this is all new information, either way, I'm glad you're here. On the other mic, I've got my dear pal, Jacqueline McCausland, aka Jackie, somebody I've known for a little bit. So why don't you do us the great honor of briefly introducing yourself?
My name is Jacqueline McCausland, as Kaylee said. A lot of my friends call me Jackie. I go to Biola University, and I study political science, which is definitely not music. Music is awesome, and it's really important to me, and I love talking about it.
I'm also not studying music either, but for some reason, it's just so enriching and really exciting for us to talk about. Our topic today is going to be relatively broad because we're going to be talking about modern-day torchbearers of antiquated genres. Who's doing a good job of revisiting or reviving genres that are maybe only established in brevity through history? Specifically, the artists that we discussed before recording are going to be Madison Cunningham, Greta Van Fleet, a lot of the people that are considered rock revivalists in 2023, because that's exciting, and we're going to talk about their influences and who influenced those people and those people. I think one of the main focal points and the main genres that specifically is kind of being revived right now is folk rock. We see this across the board, people constantly revisiting these very rich and introspective and thoroughly thought through lyrics with artists like Madison Cunningham or Wiseblood. And a lot of these artists are drawing from the pioneers for folk rock, like Joni Mitchell or Neil Young or Bob Dylan, which I know they were not the first to create this fusion of both folk and rock before. A lot of that genre was founded and paved the way by a lot of black artists. Mm-hmm. And so, but mainly, I think the artists that we will be focusing on had such a strong respect for many of the folk rock artists that maybe sprouted up in the late 50s, early 60s, like Bob Dylan, Simon and Garfunkel, Joni Mitchell, she was more 70s though, and those people influenced new people like Jeff Buckley, who is just a conglomeration of folk and classical music and jazz. And Madison Cunningham, why don't you give us a little spiel about her and why you think her music is important for musical discussion today?
Yeah, so Madison Cunningham, she's about 26, so she's fairly young. She was born and raised in California, and she learned to play guitar around the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
And her dad is actually still a worship pastor here in California.
Mm.
And so she really grew up with the influences of Christian music, gospel music, that Christian music that came from the 90s of like parents not wanting their kids to listen to rock music, the era of early Chris Tomlin and super popular influences like that in the Christian genre really informed her from a young age. And she even got her start by singing and playing guitar in church, which is very interesting because that's
how we all start, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, that's how we all start. She started to play music, write her own music, and really get into guitar. And since that young age, she had just been fascinated with the sounds of guitar and the limitless places you can go on it and the limitless styles that it has. And one of her favorite things to do with her music now is to really just experiment. One of her favorite things is mixing major and minor chords to make this weird sound infusion that's oddly satisfying to the mm-hmm. ear, and that influences her music a lot even now, especially mm-hmm. on her latest album Revealer that just came out. It's been doing very well. I believe it's been nominated for a Grammy. She's performed multiple songs from that album on a lot of various talk shows like the Kimmels and all of them.
The Kimmels.
The way she has integrated so many different sounds in her music, and the way that the covers she's even done in the past, you can almost hear that influence in her newest album. It's just really, really beautiful, and it's amazing to see her take those influences and transform them into her own style that is still particularly unique, while also touching back on some of the greatest singers that and bands that she's been influenced from.
That's something so unique about her in particular. And this just goes for many artists that I find myself gravitating towards. When you wear your influences and your heart on your sleeve like that, there's something very personal about it. Like when I was listening to Revealer this morning, because I was trying to prep myself, I actually out loud was like, that sounds like Grace by Jeff Buckley. Or just the really dynamic percussion that she uses and the infusion of early blues or a lot of African style percussion that I see there. But then she's got really intricate woodwind sections, just mixing and getting to put in so many things, but not have it sound jumbled and unstrategized. But it was beautiful, and I would suggest listening to Revealer if you haven't, because that is a really, really cool project and a really way to subtly say that this genre is coming back. And that's what I appreciate about Wiseblood as well, because in the way that Madison Cunningham wears her Simon and Garfunkel, Elliot Smith,
Radiohead
influence right on her sleeve, Wiseblood is doing the same thing with like Joni Mitchell and with George Harrison, which so does Madison Cunningham. I was frequenting her Inspired By playlist this morning. There's George Harrison on there. There's Elliot Smith. There's Rufus Wainwright, which is like another one of those revival people, I guess you could say, that are very good at adding new classical elements to music and very intricate piano work. And same with like Tom Waits, who is just known for being so, not outlandish, but unique with the percussion that he does. Like one of the songs, I can probably even play it for you, that he does, that's one of my favorites, is called Clap Hands, and it's got the most interesting percussion ever.
Yeah.
Wow. But like, no one is doing this.
No.
Tom Waits, 1985, Rain Dogs.
She even did a Tom Waits cover and a Rufus Wainwright cover too. Hold On by Waits and Poses by Wainwright. So she's very non-apologetic with showing where her influences are coming from.
And that's so awesome, because I just love when people love stuff. Like when we listened to her cover of No Surprises earlier like 10 minutes ago, and an actual cover that I didn't know existed of Lover, You Should Have Come Over. And I saw a lot of parallels with her writing and Jeff Buckley's writing. And there's something about Lover, You Should Have Come Over. The lyrics to that song are so just impactful in a way that I have never felt touched by a song before. I'm an unabashed Jeff Buckley fan. I can't talk about him enough. I've probably chewed my friend's ears out about Jeff Buckley for a couple months now. I've never heard so much sentimentality or intentionality with lyrics like that before. Oh my gosh. She's the tear that hangs inside my soul forever. Are you kidding? Who is saying that right now? And so, are there any songs of hers that the lyrical content really reaches you?
Yes. Most of her songs, first of all. It's really hard to pick. But I guess particularly off of this latest album, a lot of lyrics that I find myself thinking about very often is from one of her songs called Collider Particles. It is just, to me, a culmination of everything that this new album is kind of talking about. It's a conversation about how her old self and her new self of who she's trying to become and who she's trying to figure out who she is colliding at the same time. It's very reminiscent of this war going on inside of her, and that's the whole purpose of this album. It's called Revealer, right? She's trying to reveal everything she's going through right now as an artist that just came out of COVID, which was so hard, especially for artists that are trying to grow right now. Collider Particles, and as well as Life According to Rachel. This is kind of the capstone song for her album, I would call it. Probably reveals the most about her personally. It's a song she wrote about her grandmother that passed during COVID and due to COVID. She is very vulnerable. Madison Cunningham, usually likes to reveal her personality through how she interacts with her guitar in the songs. And she's more ambiguous when it comes to her lyrics and revealing the type of person she is through that, because words are powerful. It's really hard to be vulnerable with words. And she really does this with Life According to Rachel. And due to this song, shows me how much she's growing as an artist. It's just a very beautiful set of lyrics. I'd say the most impactful lyrics for me are definitely Collider Particles.
When I was listening to Life According to Rachel this morning, I was actually in Eagle's Nest, and I was just eating my taco salad, and then I like stopped eating, and I just was like, I don't know why it got to me. It was, were your eyes green?
Yeah, or were they blue?
Were they blue? Was it that I forgot to ask you? Especially with a grandmother.
Yeah.
If you're not that close with your grandmother, or maybe feeling like there's a generational gap or a communication gap between both you and your grandparent, it's someone in your life that you're supposed to depend on and supposed to have sentimental communication with. They go out of their way to take care for you and provide for you in a way that you can't quite understand yet because you're young. It's funny to me that most grandmas just have Weathers originals in their purse to give to you, or like the little strawberry candies.
Jelly beans is what my grandma had.
Oh, that's on a new level. Or like my grandpa, he makes peanut brittle. But whatever.
That sounds
but like
good.
They're very intentional but sweet people most of the time. You don't really have anything to reciprocate, especially as a kid. You don't realize that it's not mutual. I don't know why that lyric about are your eyes green or blue, I don't know why that got to me. I love my grandma, but do I even really know her that well? I was just thinking about my own grandma, actually. And I was like, wow. That's a dynamic that is often unexplored in music, is grandparenthood almost.
Yes.
I know a lot of artists that talk about their parents, like especially an album, I've talked about this on the last episode, but Carrie and Lowell by Sufjan Stevens is just about him mourning the loss of his mom and just feeling that tension there. But grandparenthood is a whole other ballpark. I feel like should be explored a little bit more.
Yeah. My favorite line that gets me from that song, Life According to Rachel, is the opening line. And she says, once your girl, I'm always your girl. And just going off of what you were saying about how influential grandparents really are and how unexplored that sentiment is in music, my experience was, of course, because my grandparents are much older than my parents, it naturally means I'm going to have less time with them in my life. Being around them, they played all of their old music for me. And that was my first exposure to good music that someone else really loved and enjoyed. My grandparents would talk about how they bonded over Elton John, and I would go to concerts with my grandpa as a little kid. My first exposure to music was just all of this older music. I think when it comes to music, grandparents and this older generation are so influential, and especially in our generation, because they grew up being adults through the rock era and through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. They've seen this huge growth that has just been unprecedented in the history of music. We've gone through so much change. I think that, too, says a lot about maybe why this generation is kind of going back to the greats. So influenced by them that we're making music that is very reminiscent of them.
Definitely.
Like Elton John and some of these big names that our parents and our grandparents grew up with.
I see that a lot as well. Just thinking about my grandparents, they were both sets were very involved and they cared very sincerely about their music, because a lot of it had to be tangible. Like they had to have vinyl to listen to it, or it was considered demonic if you listened to rock music.
Yeah,
especially if you grew up very Protestant. The records that were given to me as a kid, my grandpa has a lot of the adult standard stuff, but he's also got Donovan, huge worker solidarity person, big archetypal folk rock guy that just wrote about mystical things, but then he's also like, I'm a soldier, blah, blah, blah. Tim Buckley, Jeff Buckley's dad, was a huge, just kidding, he wasn't that big. Tim Buckley was another one of those people that wrote about, it was very blue collar, and I think that's why a lot of a lot of grandparents relate to the singer-songwriter qualities that a lot of artists had, like Bob Dylan, which paints a very realistic picture of maybe what it was like to be a soldier or to be, like, just very realistic settings in music. And Joni Mitchell, in particular, who is always going to be one of my favorites, who paints honest pictures about what it's like to experience motherhood or scenery she's seen or jobs she's had or people that go in and out of her life. And all of her songs feel like this really beautiful travelogue. We see the revival happening again. It's funny because yesterday there was an all hall at Blackstone. And I didn't go, but my room is situated right above where it was happening. I kind of got frustrated because everyone was, this sounds so pretentious, everyone was singing songs that were older because they thought they were kind of funny. Like, obviously, there was going to be a cover of Piano Man. There's obviously going to be...
There's always
a cover of Piano Man when it's the most inconvenient. There was a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody. But it's like, okay, so these songs are meaning something to people in a way that it meant the same thing to people that heard it for the first time. That was another thing I was going to say. A lot of those artists that our grandparents liked, it was completely brand new. They've gotten to see it go from infancy into something that is a lot more complicated and beautiful. Getting to see the progression of rock and roll and folk rock grow from something that was small into something so much more explosive. Ricky Nelson was a huge one for my grandpa. Simple, laid-back guitar, or Duane Eddy was someone he liked, or the Everly Brothers were a huge, huge for that. And then growing into late 60s would be like Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, a lot of that. And then now we've got like huge, huge rock and roll influences from bands like Radiohead, who drew back and are constantly reminiscing on the old stuff. Same with Greta Van Fleet. Obviously, people call them a Black Sabbath and a Led Zeppelin cover band because it's so, well, it's just kind of good. And I'm unafraid to say that I like Greta Van Fleet. But I think there is something kind of good about reminiscing. Not all the time, but with music, I think it's good. How often were you called an old soul?
Oh my gosh. Very often, which I take as a huge compliment. There's something about being called an old soul. I don't know, just someone that's lived life a long time and has experienced a lot of things. It's really, no, I take it as a compliment of someone calling me mature, which is always nice to hear. When someone calls me an old soul, I just think of myself as a grandma, and that's awesome because I love grandmas, because, you know, grandmas and grandpas are who you go to just like relax and joke with, and they tell you a bunch of old stories, which I often do to my friends. I love that. I'm sure you get called an old soul too.
Oh, definitely. It's the number one reoccurring comment in my life. I remember sitting at, I don't know, I'd go with my dad to eat dinners with his clients for some reason, and I'd be 13 years old asking these people about Fleetwood Mac, and I'm not a classic rock elitist. I'm not that way, but for some reason, they just always were perplexed that I knew so much about the cultural aspects of music, and they were like, "Wow, that's awesome! Oh, your daughter is an encyclopedia." Aww. And I initially took it as like a you just can't find a nice way to call me weird. But I think now it was like, wow, okay, why was I so drawn to those genres? I think too, sincerity in music is something that is very important to me. People drawing from their own experience and doing it in a way that's unique. And I feel like a lot of songs, especially from the mid-50s and early 60s, a lot of songs from that period are yearning for something that maybe they want or they desire. And it's easy to clown on them because they're like, don't leave me. I promise I'll be true.
Yep.
And they kind of came out of necessity because what else do you do when you're heartbroken? Or here's a question I'll ask you. What do you think of the idea that artists need dread or need misery to function?
Interesting. I think of like artists in a way just like the poets, right? Because they're writing lyrics, they're basically writing poetry. And so it's just this grief and hardship and suffering that always comes out in music, and especially adult standards, heartbreak and things like that. It comes from a place of emotion. And I think the reason why that's so evident in the adult standards era in particular is that the music was always alive back then. Like, it was always being played by a jazz band, and there was so much room to just go with the emotion, right? So if the singer is singing a super sad song, then the band can kind of form to the emotion of the singer and the emotion of the song. And I think music, in a really cool way, has this pliability, especially when being played live, to matching the emotion that the song is trying to carry. And I think just grief and suffering and emotion is necessary in music, because music is a harmony, right? And I think we as people try and seek harmony in subconscious and conscious ways. And I think one way that music does that is by talking about emotions. And when artists are vulnerable, it not only allows them to, you know, find this harmony within themselves in a way. It sounds very abstract, but I think that's the same reason why we, you know, as listeners and as spectators, listen to sad music. Because we deal with the same pains, same emotions, same hardships. And getting to hear someone else sing about that, you're sharing it with them. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome.
It's, for some reason, there's something very comforting about how hyperbolic many of the adult standards songs are. Because that's exactly what you're feeling in your head. But I kind of laugh at a lot of them, because it's like, so many songs are like, I'm gonna die if I don't have you, and then a random string section. Like, one of the big songs that kind of sticks out to me is called Since I Don't Have You by the Skyliners. And what I love about adult standards in particular is their inclusion of strings.
Yes,
there's just no reason
Beautiful.
That any artist or any musician shouldn't include strings. I think
agree.
Every song should have a string section. It mimics almost a crying sound,
yep.
because there feels more magnified in my head. But this is a huge one for me that I really like.
I don't have plans and schemes. I don't wanna have anything. Since I don't have you.
But see, it's like... It's so extreme, but you just saw me over here literally like converted, like reverting my whole body into a position where I was like desperate.
Contorting.
I was a contortionist. You couldn't see that, and you won't get to see that. But
it's just for us.
It's just for the exclusive listeners, guys.
There's something about the strings, and it fills every space in the song.
Yeah.
And it creates just this environment where you can't help but put headphones on, and just you feel like you're in a different place and time and space, and it's just beautiful.
So many songs like that are like, another one is the intentional usage of harmony. For some reason, just hits my brain in a way that I want to cry, because it's so beautiful.
Yeah,
it feels so extreme. But
and I think a really, like, in the era of adult standards, the French, like, Juliet Greco, she gets that same emotion. And even though she's singing in French, because she is from France, the music shows the emotion. The voice just goes with it. The lyrics are just an addition.
That's, okay, that's a whole other ballpark.
Yeah, that is.
One of my favorite musicians ever for grieving is Edith Piaf.
Yes, oh my gosh. I love her.
I have used her music as a crutch for comfort in so many occasions. She's got this one song, and it hits all of those marks for me. She's got an English version of her song Mon Dieu, which means my God. Mm. But
do you hear that bass?
So yeah, like when, I don't know, there's something really like, the desperation in a lot of artists is really beautiful to me. Because I felt that way. But I don't know.
Mon Dieu,
Okay. Another. Sorry. I'm just like, I don't know what it is. I don't like that a lot of times music feels more alive to me when I'm sad.
Yeah.
What greater comfort, I guess, this side of heaven than music?
Yeah.
One of the songs that kind of helped me get through the passing of my grandfather was this one song that he owned on a 45 called Outside of Heaven by Eddie Fisher. But it's the harmonies, the orchestra, the extreme and very dramatic lyrics for some reason just feel so...
I pass your house with misty eyes. There stands the gate to paradise. But you don't hear the heart that cries outside of heaven.
Anyway, one of the lyrics in that song that gets to me is, on your wedding day, I stood in the crowd. I could hardly keep from crying out loud. And I think when there's desperation, I keep saying that, when there's desperation and an actual authentic reason to make a song, that's why I like it. A lot of these songs today feel so superficial and it doesn't... Yeah. Their problems aren't really that relatable to me.
These songs are like, I literally was in love with this person and my heart is broken and I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this crying out, this yearning, so impactful. And I love it. And even tying that back to Madison Cunningham, her song, Your Hate Can Power a Train, it has this totally different emotion. It's not grief as much anymore, but she's able to channel this anger in that song through the music and through her lyrics. And it's just another great example of artists showing their emotion in their music in a way that resonates so strongly with the emotions, the same emotions we all feel.
How often do you find yourself inserting yourself in the position of the songwriter?
Ooh. See, lyrics are just so, so important to me. And if the lyrics can connect with the music in a way, it that is just like the perfect piece of cake for me when it comes to music. But if I can't feel the same things as the song and as the lyrics are trying to say, it's harder for me to connect with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why Madison Cunningham is one of my favorite artists of all time. And just like Lake Street Dive, they're a really small, cute little band. Rachel Price is that lead singer. She hits emotion in a very similar way. So yeah, often do I find myself thinking about the lyrics and connecting it to some phase or some chapter of my life. And it just makes me feel the music more powerfully.
That's how I feel about literally every Joni Mitchell song, which sounds really dumb, but her title track off of her album Hajira, I will often say is the song I relate to the most in my life. It reminded me a lot of like Madison Cunningham lyricism. Mm. She's just got lyrics that reach every single facet of my brain.
Yeah.
Here, I'll read some of it for you. I know no one's going to show me everything. We all come and go unknown, each so deep and superficial, between the forceps and the stone. Well, I looked at the granite markers, those tributes to finality, to eternity, and then I looked at myself here, chicken scratching for my immortality. In the church, they light the candles, and the wax rolls down like tears. There is hope in the helplessness I've witnessed 30 years. We're only particles of change, I know, orbiting around the sun. But how can I have that point of view when I'm always bound and tied to someone? I feel very much able to insert myself into her position when she struggles with conclusions or with ending things and finding herself in amongst her relationships, not just romantic, but how does she fit as a person in the world?
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's ever gonna be anybody for me that feels more relatable than her work. How can I have that point of view when I'm always bound and tied to someone? Jeez. It's really hard to find your personhood in a lot of ways, especially if you've grown up in siphons where politics look one way.
Mm.
The way you're supposed to present yourself looks one way. The way your parents talk to you are the same. Your friends in that same city as you have the same views about everything. And it's not until you have just a little speck of liberation or a little speck of external hope that you can maybe grasp onto yourself.
Mm.
It really is a journey, and you have to learn how to not only cultivate time with yourself, but figure out, like, especially as a Christian, trying to figure out who you are in relation to who you physically are on earth. And it's hard.
I just want to read a few lyrics from Collider Particles, which I was talking about earlier. And in the same way, I think we try and find ourselves in music. Music impacts us most when we find that. And so some of the lyrics in the chorus of Collider Particles says, "Collider particles, entirely possible. You might have to lose your mind to wrap your head around it. Don't be cynical. Mistakes are miracles designed to take what's sensible and ask yourself why." And then in the next version of the chorus, it continues, "Nearly biblical. Mistakes are miracles designed to take what's sensible and ask yourself why. When artists don't know who they are and they're trying to figure it all out, and you're listening to music and you're thinking the same thing, especially as a young person, like we both are, listening to someone trying to navigate that through their own music and through their own vulnerability is just like, oh my gosh, I'm literally doing this the same thing.
That's another, in the same song by Joni Mitchell, I'm sorry, this song, Hijira, means so much to me. I don't even know how to explain it, and it's not even on Spotify anymore because she removed all of her discography from Spotify. But
that's terrible.
She's got this little it's okay, I can go buy it, I have the album on vinyl. It's
oh my
okay.
gosh.
She's got this little stanza, and it's called, or it says, "In our possessive coupling, so much could not be expressed. So now I am returning to myself these things that you and I suppressed."
Mm.
Actually, growing up, for both you and me, we had the opportunity to attend, like, private school for most of, like, did you go all?
15 and a half years at a private Christian school.
Yeah, so I did not stay at the same school from my whole life, but I did go to private Christian school my whole life. And feeling like you needed other people to find your worth, or you need friends, you need the quantity of people in your life to somehow substantiate that you are worth it as a person. And so whether she's talking about a romantic context or not, feeling that you can't express yourself to the fullest extent because you've got people in your life that, like, you've got to appease.
Yeah.
Especially someone like me, who had a very hard time making friends for most of school. I wanted to be accessible and I wanted to be palatable for people because I was kind of weird. And the few people that I did have in my life, it was like I couldn't fully express myself because I needed to fit their idea of what friendship should be. And so and I guess stepping back from those friendships were the times that I fully thought I could branch out more.
That's good.
Or be more comfortable in my skin. I think that about concludes it for today.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Once again, this is Jacqueline McCausland on the other mic. I hope to see you guys soon. Thank you again. If you want to follow me on Spotify, you can do that at KAYLEIFORNIA. I made the username in 7th grade. And Instagram, KAYLEIGH_SEH. Oh, SHULTS. Jackie on the other mic is Jackie Pro 28.
28. On Spotify, I'm Jackie Pro 28123.
Are you really?
Yeah. I needed a longer username.
But that's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day. Ciao.